If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
What's up, Open Floor Globe? I'm your host, Michael the Pod Pina, and I'm joined on the other line by my good friend, Sports Illustrated staff writer Rohan Nadkarni. Rohan, we're currently in that sweet spot between the draft and free agency. Damian Lillard is posting photos of Kevin Durant in a Trailblazers jersey. Kyrie Irving is at the BET Awards dodging questions about his future with the Nets. It's anything but quiet before the storm right now, so I only have one question for you. How many hours of Love Island did you watch over the weekend?
You know, I'm a little bit, I'm hamstrung right now because Love Island's only dropping one episode a day, and it's like, let's bump that up to 2 or 3. You know what I mean? I need more. So, you know, we're fortunate the season's gotten off to a hot start. You know, Davide came in the house and the recoupling, he picked Gemma.
Can I stop you for 2 seconds?
He left Liam in a lurch. Yeah,
can I stop you for 2 seconds? Can you please, before we go further, explain what Love Island is to the listeners who don't know? Like, what are the rules of this show?
Love Island is a dating show. It starts with... is it 8 or 10 people are all in a villa? On the first day, they're all sorted into couples. The goal of the show is to be the last couple standing and win £50,000. But, you know, we're obviously just watching it for the relationship drama, etc. People are sorted into couples. They have to decide if they're going to stay with their partner, if they need to, you know, find true love. So that means you're chatting up somebody else who may already be in a couple with someone. Eventually, love triangles, love squares, love pentagons ensue. And, you know, we're consuming all that drama, and it's fantastic. We already got, you know, Liam, I don't think, is particularly happy that Davide has recoupled with Gemma, leaving Liam, you know, single and looking for someone else to stay in the villa with. So it's going to be an interesting early week here.
Okay. And where can our listeners watch Love Island who want to keep up with the Love Island Minute every week?
It's please watch it on Hulu and make sure you're watching the UK version. Please do not. I do not support, endorse, condone any other country's versions of Love Island, only the UK.
Okay. Well, I think we're you know, we're not in the thick of the off season yet, so we can't spend too much time on Love Island right now. But I wanted to give you your
much appreciated
in the sun. Okay, so on today's show, we'll be opening up the mailbag. We actually have a ton of fantastic
questions. Really good emails for this episode. Yes. These people are bringing it already.
They did. We will be previewing free agency, speculating a little bit about KD's future, and so much more. But first, a quick reminder, speaking of those emails, please keep them coming. Openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. All right, Rohan, so let's kick things off with a free agency primer. It is June 27th today. Free agency and the offseason officially begins on July 1st, later this week. It feels like the biggest names, Bradley Beal, James Harden, Zach LaVine, are going to re-sign with their respective teams. But Kyrie Irving is a wild card, and a bunch of trades that did not happen on draft night will probably go down at some point over the next couple of weeks. So to preview things, I gave you a couple questions in the outline. Let's just hop right in. The first that I gave you is pretty simple. What two teams interest you the most heading into July 1st? Do you want me to give you one of my teams first, or do you want to kind of kick things off?
You know, you can give me one of your teams first.
Okay. There's some obvious ones out there, and so I'm trying to stay a little on the path of new and fresh, and a team that we haven't talked about in a minute. It's the Utah Jazz.
Ooh, okay. I had three teams because one of mine was like a combo, and Utah was in that combo.
Such an overachiever.
I know.
The reason why I have them is just, what are they going to do?
Yeah.
I know that's the fundamental question we're asking about all these teams right now, but they're coming off another disappointing season. There's reported strife with their core players. Quinn Snyder just left. There is still no head coach there. The front office.
There's not even been so much as a rumor, really, in the last few days about their head coaching situation.
The reported front runner is Celtics assistant Will Hardy. We'll see but a lot of candidates have interviewed over the past few weeks there, and I don't know what to believe until they make a decision or when that's going to be. It's really fascinating that they're going to enter free agency presumably without a head coach. Not that they necessarily need one, but
it would be nice.
It would be nice, and it's just, it's just very odd, and I feel like, you know, when the season ended, everyone was just like, okay, either Rudy's going to get traded or Donovan's going to get traded. Who should get traded? Which one? Who should they keep, etc.? And with every passing day, it just feels like neither is going to get traded, and they're really just going to be rolling this thing back and praying that the threes fall in the playoffs, and maybe they'll add someone with the taxpayer who they can actually play in a playoff series as opposed to Rudy Gay, who they decided not to play.
Joe Ingles back, yeah. Remember how hyped everyone was about Rudy Gay?
I was leading that train, and he didn't play. I don't think he played a minute in the first round.
Because he was started playing pretty well during the regular season. It was strange.
Yeah, so this team has, I don't think any one free agent signing with the taxpayer mid-level is gonna shore up their biggest problems, which is perimeter defense, and they have, you know, a whole bunch of weak perimeter defenders. Mike Conley is just a step slower than, he's just getting up there in age, that's fine. Jordan Clarkson, Bojan Bogdanovic, you can go kind of up and down the roster there. And if they don't trade Rudy, which it's still possible that they do trade Rudy. Mm-hmm. I mean, the number one team that he has been linked to is the Chicago Bulls, which is something that we actually talked about on this podcast, I think when the season was still going on, as a potential trade destination for Rudy. With they've got Vucevic, they've got Patrick Williams, they've got some draft capital. Like, I think that that is, or I should say some young players, but like, I feel like that is the trade if there's going to be one. He's also been linked to the Nets, and I don't even, the Nets,
the Raptors, yeah,
the Raptors, the Mavs. There's been a few teams out there, and you know, he's a very, he just turned 30, I think, over the weekend actually, and I'm a big Gobert person. I think he's super valuable. I do wonder, the more I think about it, I've been thinking about it in the context of Chicago in particular, like the value of Rudy Gobert offensively outside of Utah and Quinn Snyder's offensive system is really interesting to me, because if you go to a team that doesn't have a ton of spacers and isn't like built to just jack up threes off of high pick and roll, what is Rudy Gobert doing on offense?
And on a team with DeRozan, it would be very interesting, I think, to watch. Because Vooch kind of has given them that pick and pop option. He takes way more jumpers than Gobert. I agree. It would be very interesting. It would be very interesting, especially when he's already this kind of offensive cipher in the playoffs, where you kind of need him to do a couple of things when teams inevitably try to space you out. Yes. And he's owed a lot of money. He's owed a lot of money.
He is. So, like, okay, what do they do? Like, are you trading Mike Conley? Or what can you get for Mike Conley, who is going to make $22.6 million this season? I is Nickeil Alexander-Walker as a carrot? Is he a carrot to attach to one of these contracts? I don't know. And if they do nothing, like, just because they're hosting All-Star Weekend in 2023, like, I don't know. That would just be such a bummer.
I wrote the argument for keeping Gobert and Mitchell together after the season, and I think I've talked myself into it a little bit. This is the team 2 years ago, still the number one seed. I think they had decent moments in that. I mean, they were, a shot away from being in a game seven. Who knows what could have happened? I think they had some positive moments in that series, even though when it looked bad, it looked very bad. I think maybe you bring in a new coach, see if you can change the system, see if you can find some.
Well,
kind
they
of,
do have to bring in a new coach.
Yeah, you know, I because it's tempting as it is to say tear it all down, trade both of them. That's just never really been Utah's MO as a franchise. And do you really want to just be stuck in a tanking wilderness for the next however many years, knowing that you're probably not going to be a big free agent destination? I guess why blow it up before you really have to, unless those guys start asking out? Maybe you get an injury or something that goes your way. You're in the conference finals. I'm a little tempted for them to actually keep it all together.
So they have six point something million taxpayer mid level. They have a $9.7 million trade exception from the
Remember
Jordan
when
Rose
it was
move.
Just the mid level exception and the biannual exception, and now it's the non taxpayer and the taxpayer, and just, oh God, it's so annoying.
Gotta, you know, make it fair for everybody, Rohan. That's the name of the game.
You can't have a checkbook championship.
No, that would be frowned upon.
Yeah.
And if the team that loses to the checkbook champion, they should be able to get something also. Just going to throw that out there. So I don't know what else you have to say about Utah, but if you're stale and you're actually going to go into next season with the same roster, I find that very hard to believe. I feel like they have to make moves, even though they don't have a lot of resources. And
yeah, I'm trying to find a wing or someone like that that I could bring in. We talked about this person before. What if you can maybe get a Caleb Martin or someone like that? Mm-hmm. An injection of energy. I think, you know, you have to challenge Mitchell to improve defensively. You have to find a coach who's going to somehow get improvement out of him on that end of the floor. I think that that's reasonable to expect that he might not become a lockdown defender. He can become, you know, Devin Booker, someone who I think has managed to do enough defensively to be on the floor in the playoffs, certainly. So, yeah, you got to find a way. I mean, Rudy Gobert, you got to find a way for him to – can he add one shot to his game, like, say, DeAndre Ayton has, something like that. Sometimes you have to challenge your stars to improve as well. So I think that's in the realm of possibility for Utah.
Real quick, the last thing I want to say about Utah before you give me your team. Did you think about them at all when Jeremy Grant was traded for like a 2025
first? That was
first?
Tough, yeah. I mean, I guess could they have really – they would have had to send some salary back because I guess
right.
Portland
they
is
did
taking
not have,
– yeah.
Yeah, Portland had a big trade exception. That's why they I think, very attractive to Detroit.
But didn't you say they have the Ingles exception? Oh, but they can't fit him into that. I mean,
no, that's only $9.7 million. But I just thought that that was, and yeah, you're right to bring up the salary. And frankly, it goes the other way where I do wonder what the appetite is to spend money in Utah right now. So maybe they just cut salary and run it back and hope for the best. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a lot of teams have to be a little upset that that's all it took to get Grant. But, you know, Portland obviously had the financial flexibility. But I mean, that was a strange trade. I guess Detroit, you know, they wanted to free up space, whatever. But I was surprised that that's all it took to get him.
Yeah. All right. Give me a team that you've got your eye on.
Well, this is a team that I kind of had put in the same category as Utah to an extent, but I got the Phoenix Suns as one of my teams.
Love it.
Mostly because what do they do? They were a 64-win team. We all thought they were I think most of us thought they had a very good chance to make the finals, if not win it all. Don't even get to the conference finals. Again, that game 7, I think that was a 1 in 100 chance would happen that night. Not the Mavs winning, but the manner in which they won, which I think is going to maybe have some people thinking they need to do things more extreme. But what are they going to do with DeAndre Ayton? I think they need help at backup point guard, definitely. Campaign kind of really struggled during the playoffs. Chris Paul, I just don't know that they can count on his long-term health in these postseason runs. Mm-hmm. What do they do to kind of improve this team? Do they maybe look into, you know, do you try to go for a huge trade with Ayton? Maybe you attach Cam Johnson in it as well and try to get a star back. Is there anyone out there that they can kind of go get? I just want to know how, you know, are they going to be willing to commit to being this contender, or will ownership kind of dial it back because of how the season ended?
So I don't want to fast forward too far, but I'm going to. One of the other questions that I have for you is to give me your favorite fake Kevin Durant trades.
Now we're talking. Now we're talking, Mike.
So what do you think about this? DeAndre Ayton, Mikal Bridges, 3 unprotected first round picks for Kevin Durant. What? Who says no to that?
If you're Phoenix, is there a way that you can do the trade with Johnson instead of Bridges? Is there anyone else they can offer, like, in combo?
I think you need Bridges because of salary. So he's kind of got to be a part of it.
I mean, I think Ayton, with his sign and trade, will get you close enough in salary. Although there's that weird, like, 50% rule or something like that, that I don't know when that triggers. Oh, that's an interesting one. I almost think if you're Phoenix, you have to find a way to keep Bridges. This is where
Kevin Durant.
This is where the Jalen Smith pick really, 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 really hurts them. Because if they, and he was actually, I thought, had some good moments last season when he had to play. But if they draft anyone with upside there and actually have them under contract, that person gets put in this trade. Am I really? Oh, my God. I think I'm. The problem is, who plays perimeter defense for them? Do you move Crowder? Do you play Crowder and Durant together? Are you ready to? Could you play Cam Johnson and Durant together?
Yes. Why not? What's wrong with that?
I think Johnson is a little bit too slow to defend the other team's best perimeter player, which is what's happening in that scenario. Durant's not doing that during the regular season. And probably not even the first couple rounds of the playoffs.
Here's the question. Can this starting five win the title? CP, Booker, KD, Cam Johnson, and then I'm just going to say they'll bring back JaVale McGee, who I think is a free agent.
Saric.
Sure. So, like, that's starting five right there. And then you've got Shamit. You've got who else is on this roster? Like, totally blanking about the Phoenix Suns. You've got, Shamit, Campaign, Torrey Craig. That's
Aaron Holiday, one of the Holidays.
He's a free agent, but he's restricted.
Yeah.
But bottom line is, and I don't know, I feel like you probably will be the favorite to win the title. Do you disagree with that? KD, Booker, Chris Paul, your three best players.
Yeah, no, that's a title favorite. That's a title favorite. I mean, talk about half-court scoring. Talk about pull-up Hezzy Jimbos.
The Jimbos.
going Jimbo Fisher mode in the NBA playoffs.
So that was one of my KD fake trades, and I think that
I like it a lot. Honestly, I think that's one of the best trades Brooklyn could do.
So Brooklyn's interesting because if they do that trade, you need the three firsts. Those are very, very valuable. And then you're just like, our three best players are Ben Simmons, DeAndre Ayton, and Mikal Bridges. And we're just going to – these are three young guys, relatively.
Actually, if you told me you had that team a year ago, you'd be like, yeah, that sounds incredible. And I think Ayton's actually the kind of player, the kind of center who could work with Simmons.
Simmons would be the five and Ayton would be the four. Let's go. Just get crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, so can I give you another team that I have? We got to zoom through these because I want to get to the questions that we have.
Okay.
My other team is the Atlanta Hawks. They are... I feel like I adopted the Atlanta Hawks a couple of years ago. Just love everything about them. Longtime listeners know I love Trae Young. Love how they've drafted around him. Love DeAndre Hunter. Big John Collins fan. But looks like John Collins is on the way out. Everybody has been reporting this. I mean, it's been like 18 months of reporting that John Collins is going to get traded.
Yeah, but then nothing happened draft night. I mean, I guess obviously he could still go, but...
I feel like now is the time. Mm. I don't think that they are just going to roll this back, add a pick, add a mid-level signing. I don't think that's what they're going to do. I think that Collins, Bogdanovich, Herder, I think they're really shopping around. What's fascinating to me, though, is are you willing to take a step back as an organization and not – I mean – you'll play a Kong. I should say Capella also is someone who could be on the trade block, is on the trade block. Are you willing to take a step back as an organization knowing that Trae Young's about to sign a Supermax contract extension?
I mean, what are you really taking a step back from? Because I don't think this is the...
Well, I mean, what I mean by that is, are you... Okay, so you just drafted Griffin. You're going to re-sign Hunter. But am I trading Collins... Let's say Collins and Herder in separate deals for draft compensation or guys on rookie scale contracts or expiring deals. Like, is that what I'm trying to do right now? I don't know. Danilo Gallinari's contract is it's non-guaranteed until June 29th, which is in 2 days. Yeah. $5 million guaranteed, $21.4 million guaranteed if he stays on the team or if they. Don't wait.
I feel like the only way they guarantee
him
is if they know they have a trade. I don't see them bringing him back at that number.
Right. So it's just a lot of questions right now in the short term for this team. And I still think that, defensively, they were atrocious. I don't think that that was because of personnel. I think that that was just like youth and effort, and having Trae Young play a ton of minutes didn't help. But
is the KD trades question? That's a question too, right?
That is a question.
Can I step on it again?
Yes, go ahead. Please.
I mean, don't you think the Hawks could put together a really good package for him?
They sure could.
It would be like Phoenix Light, but you could do like Collins, Hunter, and picks, could you not?
Absolutely. I'm just thinking about, do I have enough to win the title if I'm Atlanta? Trey and KD, and who else?
I think you're probably still keeping a couple of your wings. So I think in this scenario, you would have
Herter.
You'd have Bogdanović.
Okongwu,
who we both really like. You'd still have Capella even. Can you flip one of Herter and Bogdanović into someone who's a little bit more defensive minded, even though I really like Bogdanović?
I don't think that's enough if I'm Brooklyn, to be honest.
How much worse is it than the Phoenix package? Because if the Phoenix package is never on the table, I mean, maybe you get one more player then. Maybe you get Herter, or maybe you get Okongwu, Collins, and Hunter. Is that way too much? Could you get three of their guys for KD?
And three picks?
Two picks, two swaps.
I need three picks, and I'm not even budging off that if I'm moving Kevin Durant. Like, I don't have any picks. I gave all my picks to the Houston Rockets. So number one, if I have to move him and it's the apocalypse,
you know a quote that's picks. Aged the best is Raphael Stone. I believe it was him who was like, just wait. He was like, wait how these picks turn out. We were all like, no, man, that Harden trade was really bad. But here we are. Like, is anyone happier than the Houston Rockets this week?
No, to answer your question. And it's a redux of what happened with the Celtics when they owned the future of the Brooklyn Nets, and look what they did with it. I mean, when you own a team's draft future,
they just turned into a team that perennially comes close.
Brutal. Okay, so let's actually skip ahead, unless you really wanted to give me another team that you had your eyes on.
I was just going to put Portland and Detroit. I'll just throw them out there as like teams that actually could have cap space and be interesting with it.
Guess what? My other KD trade destination is Portland.
Let's hear it. Let's hear the trade.
Simons, Sharp, Josh Hart, three firsts.
We just talked about Simons before we started recording. I like him a lot. I think you like him a little bit more than me, even though I think he's really, really good. And over 40% from three last year on almost eight shots a game is nuts.
Pull-up sniper.
Yeah, but I would maybe rather take the Hawks trade that I came up with.
Okay. Sharp, I don't know anything about draft prospects. Yeah. Smart people. Mike Schmitz in that front office was reportedly really big on Sharp.
I mean, Sharp is basically like a fourth first round pick at this point. Like, he's theoretical entirely.
Right. And I just think if, like, you in that situation, you'd probably like look to recuperate or rebuild Ben Simmons' trade value potentially, and then
in my trade, I think that Hunter and Collins are actually good fits around Simmons.
I think if you're Joe Tsai, though, and you're like, we were so close to having the greatest team ever built, and now I'm just like, no, we're still going to like be good. That's our strategy, but we're doing it with John Collins. And he's going to be our second best player. Like, that's just not, I just don't think that's a feasible strategy.
That's fair. I like DeAndre Hunter a lot, though. I want to throw that out there.
Yeah, no, he's
a DeAndre Hunter fan.
He's great. If he had already made an all-star team, then that would make it a lot easier to make a trade like that, but he hasn't.
Who would you... This is maybe going to sound really dumb in 2 seconds. Is there a chance, like, 3 years from now, you'd rather have DeAndre Hunter than Mikal Bridges?
No, that's definitely possible. Absolutely. Okay. I love Hunter.
Me too. And I think he's like, I think in the, especially in that Heat series, he was showing like he's more than 3 and D. Like he can put the ball on the floor. I think he's got some offensive juice.
Yeah. When I did my Hawks cover story, and I was asking around, you know, who's the second all-star here? It was like, Hunter's kind of got to be that guy.
For sure.
For them to, for this era to really hit and pop. So unless you moved him for someone like KD, that still rings true, and I think they believe in him as an organization. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about a couple free agents before we open up the mailbag. Let's talk about a couple free agents who are really interesting to us heading into July 1st. My first one is just your boy, PJ Tucker. And he interests me because it's... I honestly forget who reported this. I'm so sorry. I read so much... try to gather all the intel that I can from across the internet, but someone reported that it would be people around the league would be surprised.
I believe this was Mark Stein. This was Mark Stein.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Shout out to Mark Stein. Would be surprised if PJ Tucker returned to the Heat, which is fascinating. He was a starter for them.
I mean, he was massive for them, especially during the regular season.
Yes. He's, you know, he's played so many minutes over the past 5 years. I believe he's appeared in more playoff games than any player since 2017, which is a wild statistic. And he went, I think, 3 straight regular seasons playing all 82, I want to say. So, you know, if anyone can kind of truck through and stiff arm father time for longer than anticipated, it's this dude, absolutely. And I'm fascinated to see like what contender will give him the mid-level, the money he's looking for, but also the opportunity to contend for championships, which is obviously what he wants to do at this stage in his career. So it's just he's fascinating to me.
And it's like right now. it's a redux of what happened with the Bucks, where whoever signs him is significantly weakening a rival contender. I mean, I think it would be a huge loss for Miami. He was so important for what they did last season. And yeah, once the playoffs start, every team wants PJ Tucker. And Stein's reporting that most executives expect him to sign the 3-year, $30 million contract with the Sixers, which I think would require the Sixers to do some more trades. So if you see them making moves, that could be for PJ Tucker. I mean, if Philly brought in Melton and Tucker, that'd be a really nice offseason for them. I think those guys would pair really well with their stars. But yeah, I think Tucker's a great pick. I think that he's going to, like I said, once the postseason starts, every team wants him. He might be one of those guys where the last year of that contract, he barely plays. He might be under 10 minutes a game. He might not be in your playoff rotation, but I think he's got at least one more great playoff run in him.
Yes. Good call by you to shout out the Sixers as a potential suitor. They are over the tax. I'm trying to look up right now live.
I'm pretty confident that they would need to clear a contract or two to offer him the 3 years, $30 million that's been reported. The other cap wonks have been out there with that information.
Right, $2.7 million over the tax right now. So that's they need to get under that number. Shake Milton, Jaden Springer, just naming some. And they're also trying to move on from Tobias Harris. And Thibault. So that'll be interesting. He would be a great fit for them, obviously. I think would be really cool to see him like on a team that isn't like championship contender, but like if they got PJ Tucker, it would be really fun to see them in a seven-game mm-hmm. series like Portland, where like Portland is like, okay, we've got Dame, we're going to re-sign Nurk, got Jeremy Grant, we've got Simons, we've got, you know, what can some of these younger pieces do with us? And then we add PJ Tucker to be our small ball five slash starting power forward. I think that that would be really interesting. We'll see though. Like, yeah. But he's really interesting yeah. for me. Who do you got your eye on?
I'm going to go with my guy, Gary Harris, who got back up to 38% shooting from three last year. I think the injuries derailed what was going to be a really promising career in Denver. Like, I thought there were a couple years where his floor was just higher than Jamal Murray's. I think that people maybe don't remember how close they were at the start of their career in terms of the impact they brought on the court. And, you know, they don't win that Jazz series in the bubble, for example, without Gary Harris, who kind of came in later in that series and started to offer at least something resembling resistance against Donovan Mitchell. I think he's the kind of player that if a contender signs him, there are certain players who the better team they play on, the more value they have. Like Andrew Wiggins is a perfect example.
Absolutely.
And I don't think Gary Harris is going to be Andrew Wiggins, but I think he could have a massive impact for a contender. I'd be really fighting to sign him because I think that there's a chance he goes under the radar and some team that may not have cap space is able to get him from one of these exceptions. And I think he could be part of a really good team's playoff rotation.
Yeah, he's interesting just because he's coming off like a pretty big contract. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, you know, he made $20.4 million last year. I wonder if he would be up for like a make good, not just hunting the biggest dollar amounts mm-hmm. and contract length amounts, if he actually were willing to kind of restore his value mm-hmm. on a good team for yeah, the
take
taxpayer.
That 1 year deal, yep.
I don't think he's veteran minimum yet, but like, yeah, like you look at someone. I don't know how much money Otto Porter is going to get, but he just signed the vet min, and now he's going to make yeah. more than that. So that's kind of an example. Obviously, Gary Harris is a little bit younger, and when healthy last year in Orlando, he was on my radar for sure. I've loved to see him in a little bit more of a relevant situation.
The Heat should be fighting to sign him.
He would be interesting there. At the same time, I'm not sure how much he moves the needle, but he's attractive, I think. I think good teams have their eye on him. Mm-hmm. That's what I'll say. So that's a fun one. Okay, should I give a player or should we open up the mailbag?
What your do you call. Do? This is your world. I'm just living in it, Mike.
Wow. Okay, so
we could each give one more player, but we don't have to have a discussion. We could just go quickly.
Okay, TJ Warren is my guy. Just completely overlooked. Obviously, he had some serious medical issues and operations, and that's not good. Mm-hmm. And physical health obviously matters. But I'm always optimistic with guys like this for whatever reason. Not super old. I've seen what he can do when healthy. He was basically Michael Jordan in the bubble. Like, I don't know if people remember that, but he was so ridiculous. And just like a team that if you were, okay, so just throwing like a very good, I know you're laughing because you know, I think you know what I'm going to say, but like a team that had struggles in the NBA finals scoring points, if they had a TJ Warren come off the bench, that would be helpful. And that's like, you know, I think a really good team, this applies to just about, not even just the Celtics, like any good basketball team that wants size on the wing, that wants someone who can, you know, independently create shots for themselves, who's a really good cutter too, not necessarily going to play make, not necessarily going to spot up, but can spot up as he's proven.
I'm laughing, by the way, only because we said we were going to go quick on these.
And I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I love it. I love that. It's what I love about you, Mike. But keep going, please.
So that's That's someone that...
No, TJ Warren was really, really good. You, like, perimeter scorers like that, like, just don't really become available. And like you said, there's a chance that a really good team is able to pick him up, and I think that could be very interesting. I think he'd be, like, an incredible pickup for the Celtics. I mean, they still have that 40A exception. I don't know if you could do a sign-and-trade into something like that, et cetera, but...
Just sign him into the mid-level, baby. Let's go.
Yeah, I mean, that would be an absolute steal, I think, so... No, I think he's really, really interesting. It's hard to gauge because he hasn't played in a couple years, but yeah, he's a very, very, very intriguing player.
Okay, give me your player in much more concise terms and verbiage than
I mean, I'll just say Gary Payton II, who I think is really an emerging perimeter defender. I like the way he plays offense because... he's willing to take those open threes, but also can play big, be a screener, etc. I think it's always going to be tricky when you sign guys away from Steph Curry, but I mean, there's a lot of teams I'd like to see him play for.
He's good. He made my all defensive team.
Yeah.
Second team all defense. Tremendous player. Yeah, I agree that it's kind of weird that it took him so long to kind of catch on. Yeah. In a winning environment, but he's very good, and congratulations to him.
Okay. Would you rather have him than Tybalt?
Yes. He's better. Same. I think he's better.
I agree.
Okay, let's open up the mailbag. We got some good ones here, some juicy ones. First one comes in from Peter, who resides in Sydney, Australia. Peter writes, "Good day, the pod, Rohan and Chris. I know I have asked one of these questions before, but I have two very serious ones for you. The first is, who is cooler between Michael and Rohan? I would include Chris in the question, but now that he's homies with Spike Lee, he clearly needs to be excluded."
True.
So when you're friends with Spike Lee, but you also watch The Affair, how does that cross out? I'm just asking for the people out there.
No, I mean, in Herring's defense, I also watched The Affair, but not at the expense of other TV shows. And that's not true. I haven't seen The Sopranos, The Wire, or Breaking Bad. But
okay, you don't need to say those things in public. And I think you just answered this question. I am cooler than you. Part two of Peter's question.
If you heard Mike's answer about TJ Warren, that's me submitting my case.
The second part of my question, writes Peter, were the two teams that competed in the NBA Finals this year two of the weaker Finals teams that you remember? I'm not saying the Celtics and the Warriors are bad teams, but both have fatal flaws, and I feel like neither stand up to the levels of champions / finalists in past years, and I don't think that they would win against any of the last 10 champions.
Ooh.
Curious to hear your thoughts. With love, Peter. Peter, thank you so much.
It's taking for the all email. My strength not to say Peter in an English accent right now. I don't know why. I don't know why.
You won't.
I'll save that for our Patreon.
So I don't know if this is a hot take or not. I believe that I just disagree with the question. Like I don't think that these were bad finals teams.
Wow. I actually kind of agree with it to the level that I think we got so used to super teams that it was kind of strange to see these teams in the finals. I think that the parity in the league this year was very good. I think used to things being so top heavy, but I think if you're looking at it since 2010, I think it's like,
you don't have to go back far. Like,
I think the teams in the conversation are the 2020 Lakers, even though they had LeBron and a version of Anthony Davis that was spectacular. But, like, I'd pick the 2020 Lakers against the Celtics team.
How dare you? How dare you?
I'm sorry, but I would, like, pretty easily.
Do you remember who the third best player on that team was?
It didn't matter. That's the thing, is it just didn't matter the way AD was playing in that playoff run.
Doug. Williams all day.
Don't Grant Williams all day me.
I can't.
Yeah, I don't think they were bad teams. I just think that the league has flattened a bit after we reached this like super team height from, you know, 2011 to 2017 or 18 or whatever.
So I don't think that the Lakers 2020 championship team was a great team. I don't think that the Heat team that made the finals was a great team. Sorry, Rohan. I then look at last year's finals, and it's like, this isn't a question to discredit champions at all. Oh, like, you won the title.
Yeah, yeah.
Great. I just don't think that Suns team was particularly great. I don't think that the Bucks were like an all-time juggernaut.
I mean, I think that Bucks team was actually a little bit underrated. Now, if you look back at, they had Middleton and Tucker, whom they didn't have this year.
Dude, but like, they couldn't score in the second round. Like, they couldn't score. Like, people have.
Like, I mean, we were all firing Bud.
No, it's, yeah, but it's just like, when people think about like. That I think when people think about the Bucks as the champion, they think the first thing that pops in their head is Giannis obliterating the Suns in Game 6. Just a masterful performance.
Which was a close
historic
game.
Historic. Yeah. And
Andy hit like 80% of, you know, whatever. He hit like all his free throws.
Sure.
Too.
Just it was an iconic game. Disney watched it and was like, we have to make a TV show about this person. Herring watched it and was like, I think he might have to be number one in the top 100. I love Chris.
You very conveniently evaded the questions about who's going to be the number one at your top 100 during our three-man
pod. I'm thinking about it. No, I'm
still
thinking
about it. And then you also evaded the question when I directly texted you about it.
I'm thinking about it. It's still, you know, there's a lot of candidates. That's all I'll say. But I don't think that the Warriors are significantly worse than that Bucks team is. I don't.
And yeah, agreed.
I don't think that the Warriors or the Celtics are worse than that Lakers team. And
I'm picking that Lakers team against
that the Lakers Celtics team was not here. Good. I'm sorry, it wasn't.
It was top heavy enough that to win.
I'm sorry. Like, my thoughts on
KCP,
the bubble.
KCP probably third best player on that team.
Yeah, thank you for proving my point. What do you think about the... I think the Raptors are phenomenal, but, like... I'm sorry, just, like, that team is not, like, this all-time juggernaut that really separates itself from...
Definitely not.
...those Warriors or the Celtics. I'm just, like, sorry, I don't see it. Like,
wait, you don't think the 2019 Raptors would have beaten these Celtics?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it's... They aren't significantly better to even necessitate a question that says that these two teams, these Warriors and these Celtics.
It was to me, it's less about these teams and more about this season. I think we're just going to look back on this season and think it was a little bit weird. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to make this point, but I think that this question is more a reflection about how there were a lot of good teams this season. And while like the Raptors may not have separated themselves in this like macro conversation, like they'd separated themselves that season in a way that it feels like maybe the Warriors and Celtics didn't this year. I don't know. I'm with you though. I don't think these teams were bad or weak. I just think we're entering kind of a different phase of NBA basketball.
I think people were expecting the entire season for the Suns to be in the championship, the Bucks to be in the championship, the Nets to figure it out and be in the championship. And when none of those teams advanced, it was like, okay, well. So I think expectations always kind of cloud what is actually happening when we talk about sports and the NBA in particular. So I think both those teams were really good. I mean, like, people were saying that the Celtics had the best defense in like 25 years. Like, just because you lose in the finals, even though your defense played really well in the finals, like, I can't just disregard everything that happened before that. Like, still awesome. Mm-hmm. Awesome team. Okay. So, thank you so much for that email, Peter. It was great. We have an email now from Calvin, who writes, "Hi, Michael, Rohan, and Chris. First time writing, long-time listeners since the Andrew Sharp and Ben Golliver days. After Steph's finals MVP and fourth ring propelled him into some people's all-time top 10 list, his game four performance in the finals is clearly a legacy-defining game. What are some of your most memorable and legacy-defining games of your top 10 players? Sidebar, everyone's top 10 is an entire discussion unto itself. LeBron's game six in 2012. Sorry, not sorry, Michael, I'm from New York. Against the Celtics is another example. You could also go the other direction with legacy tarnishing performances that affect how certain players are viewed historically. You have Harden's many playoff flameouts to choose from, or Chris Paul's Game 7 versus the Mavs this year. Keep up all the great work, everyone. I appreciate all the nuanced, intelligent, and at times hilarious discussions." Thank you, Calvin. Great question. So, all-time top 10 legacy. I have some legacy games that I just want to say.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not necessarily all-time top 10 players for me,
but just good games. No, I did the same. Yeah,
like legacy defining games in recent history, the past couple years. Mm-hmm. I mean, we thought that Jimmy Butler's legacy would be the bubble, and then he had this playoff run. Mm-hmm. I think his game six in the Garden, when everyone wrote and said that the Heat were zombies.
When Boston State iconic. Media was planning the parade routes, and yep.
That never happened, yeah. But anyway, Max Strus was out of bounds. Don't get me started. Do you have a legacy-defining game that kind of pops into your head?
I mean, this is like legacy-defining, but also just like NBA what-if games. Klay game six against the Thunder in 2015 or 16 rather.
Great one.
Kawhi's game seven against the Sixers in 2019, second round, which is, when you look at the box score now, it was like inefficient and you're like, what? But like when you were watching it, the game was nuts, and obviously he hits, you know, an iconic shot. Yeah, those are a couple big ones for me. And obviously LeBron's game six against Boston was just incredible. I mean, you could put his game seven against the Spurs in 2013 in the conversation as well. So, yeah, those were some ones that popped in my mind.
So I don't think it's legacy defining, especially because these careers aren't over. You said Kawhi in game seven of the 2019 playoffs. Kawhi in, I know it's the first round, but Kawhi in game six of the 2021 playoffs against the Dallas Mavericks. That's like one of the greatest games I've ever seen by a player. He had 45, six,
he was
25
nuts
shots
in the last two games of that series.
Yeah, his game seven was remarkable. It was 28, no turnovers, 10 rebounds, 9 assists, 4 steals. He's guarding Luka. Luka was like, if you know, you know. Do you like anyone who remembers watching that playoff series was like, it was 3 points every single time Zubac switched out on him. It was just like a lot.
It finally got to a point where, and I remember saying it, I think, on this podcast. But it finally got to a point where the Clippers were like, we're going to stop switching. We have Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard is guarding Luka Doncic. And that made a huge difference.
So for him to, and honestly, like, this guy had already won 2 titles. So whatever, he's like all-time postseason winning percentage, first ballot Hall of Famer. But there was still a lot of pressure on him in that series. And they were down. They lost the first 2 games. At home, had to win 2 on the road, were down 3-2. They were facing elimination in that game 6 on the road. It's just, he was, like, that's such epic stuff. I don't really care that it's the first round. Like, that was an unreal
game. Yeah, this is a lame pick. I'm sorry First round game, okay. Really? Come on, dude.
You really don't like the Clippers and Kawhi Leonard, and I don't know why.
That's not true. What are you talking
every time
about? I was on Clippers Island with you last year. I love Paul George. I just don't think a game for a guy who's like a two-time Finals MVP, you're going to put a round one there.
I prefaced it by saying it's not necessarily legacy-defining.
This wasn't, hey, pick a cool game someone played one time.
This was a very important game. It was
a first round game.
It's probably his best game, best all around game he's ever played.
Oh, come on, stop.
Oh, no, I will not. That was the best game he's ever played. Like, not even
my God.
Absolutely not. Legacy defining Giannis is that the one we mentioned. Mm-hmm. That's legacy defining stuff right there. That's a closeout game in the finals. Like, of course. And then I just got to shout out my guy, Jason Tatum's 46 on the road in the Eastern Conference semifinals against the defending champs.
Was that points or turnovers, the 46?
That was a good joke. Do you write your own stuff? So shout out to him. Great game. Yeah. Are there any others? Do you want to kind of close things out with our last email or... anywhere else to go here?
Dwayne Wade, 2006 Game 3 finals against the Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah, shout out to Tim Donaghy. Email coming in from Aaron. This is a great one. Really made my mind, the gears in my mind were tinkering as I was reading this. What is a wholly unnecessary change you'd make to the NBA?
This is such a good question. I literally had a dream about this morning.
Mine is a, quote, lucky loser lottery pick. Each year, one team that lost in the first round is randomly selected to jump into the lottery. The pick itself is also random, but guaranteed to be somewhere between 7 and 12. I'm sorry. I love it. My preference... team selection is unweighted, but the pick number is weighted. A team is only eligible for this once every 3 years, and if they are selected while ineligible, there is no, quote, lucky loser that year. Imagine the drama of Brooklyn getting to pick 9th this year. It could also help with some of the, quote, middle-class problem teams like Portland or Indiana have run into the past. So this is a fascinating one.
This is one of the best. This is one of the best emails we've ever gotten. Shout out to Aaron. This is normally, you guys, I'm honest about the email. Sometimes I don't like the zany questions. I don't like the out there stuff. This is a really, really, really good question. Not only is it a good question, it's also a fantastic suggestion. Like, I want the lucky loser lottery pick. This helps a lot with tanking. It's not just the play-in. Now there's an incentive to being in the first round of the playoffs. I think it's a fantastic idea.
It's amazing. I feel like the league should steal this. I don't know why 7 and 12 were the...
But it sounds perfect. At the same time, I'm like, yep, that's fair. It's like, it's just somehow the perfect range for it. It doesn't feel unfair, but it also feels weighty at the same time. Like, it's a fantastic idea.
So, if, let's say, the Nets were to...
Once he was like, imagine if the Nets had the 9th pick this year, I'm like, wait, that would be freaking awesome. Like, yeah, that sounds so cool.
That would be crack. Or like
exactly. Oh my god.
The Pelicans had the 8th pick or the 9th pick. Like, if they suddenly got the 10th one too, that would be crazy.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Pelicans also deserve like their own podcast episode for their offseason. I just want to say they're very fascinating. But anyway, I'm not creative as Aaron is, and I don't know any. I honestly have. I know I said my gears were grinding. Mm-hmm. They manifested nothing. Exactly. There was nothing that actually came to mind that I would change about the NBA. I love the NBA. I would like to see. I mean, the most obvious one is I just want teams. If you're the best team in the regular season, I think you should be able to pick who your opponent is in the first round. That's all. I've always believed that. Do away with conferences. No one cares. And the best team, the two best teams, two best records, just let them pick who they want to play and let the brackets kind of sort themselves out from there. Obviously, there needs to be a little bit more thought into what I just said for it to actually work. But I want that to happen. I think that would be really cool. Yeah, that'd be spicy.
The NBA All-Star Draft, whoever picks second should get the next two picks.
That's what the change you want to make?
Yeah. Listen, whenever we played basketball growing up, and it was like, do you want the first pick or do you want the next two? And I think that that's what the NBA All-Star Draft should be like. Because every year, LeBron's team gets way too stacked. And people are like, wait, why does he have such a better team every year? And it's because they don't, you know, you got to let the second guy go next two. Or give LeBron the option. It's like, do you want first pick? Do you want next two? I bet that's how they do it in the playground back in the day, you know?
I didn't include this part of...
And I just wondered, they said wholly unnecessary change.
Yes. I do want to say that Aaron at the top, I cut this out from the outline because it was just like way too much for me to read on the pod, but he wanted to also incorporate, I think it was Australian football's, the playoff format, and I just can't even get into it. So I'm sorry, Aaron. I know that you're probably listening to this, like, why did he just cut my email in half? But it was too much for me to try to analyze and communicate to our audience, but it was a great email. Awesome stuff. I would love to see the NBA just steal this. I know there's some people who work for the NBA who listen to this podcast. I just steal this idea, incorporate it in the league.
It has to happen. It has to happen.
It would be amazing. We got to incentivize, like, do more things to incentivize making the playoffs.
Agreed.
I think that's what the league really wants. This incentivizes that as an organization.
Also, this is an idea I'm workshopping on the fly that I thought of right before we started. So it's like, it's not even half baked. It's the oven still heating up. You know what I mean? But, and I actually don't like this aspect of the show, but Top Chef has something called Last Chance Kitchen. So it's like when you lose, Padma's like, pack your knives and go. But Tom Clicky's like, but you still have Last Chance Kitchen. And there's a second loser's bracket that's going on during the actual competition. And then later in the competition, there'll be like four people left and they'll be like, surprise, the Last Chance Kitchen winner is coming back into the competition. And it could be the person who got eliminated in week two, but they won every week in Last Chance Kitchen and now they're back. The NBA, it should be like, there's three teams left in the playoffs and it's like, surprise, so-and-so is coming out of the loser's bracket for a play-in game and a chance to make it to the conference finals. It's like a WWE ladder match. It's like you get the briefcase. It's like you get a chance to play, like, wrestle for the WWE belt whenever you want it. It's like, we need some kind of loser's bracket. And it's like, oh my God, like the Charlotte Hornets have a play-in game to make the conference finals.
You know, I wish I read the Australian rules section of the email because that was clearer to me than what you just said. man, good stuff. Aaron, this was a great, great email. I think we have to go out on it.
Okay. Also, bring back dancing at All-Star Weekend, like during the player introductions. Like, you know, they used to have so much fun.
When Shaq went out, yeah. Like, you can't force it. You got to have, like, guys who want to dance.
Somebody's got to take the reins and, like, get the guys, like, you know, they do a little thing and now it's like everyone's mean mugging and, you know, bring back some joy.
I feel like Giannis has
a
that
little
in him.
Bit, and in LeBron when he was introduced in Cleveland, that was really fun. But we need more. You know, we want to see the camaraderie. We want to see these guys, you know, look like they're friends. Let's give us a little something.
Yes, I agree. Okay, I think.
Do you
that's
think the Jabberwockies are this have been the same people this entire time?
I mean, no, because I think that's why they wear the masks, right?
Ah.
That's part of the reason. Okay. Maybe. I don't know. I honestly have not thought about the Jabberwockies in a really long time. I'm sorry. But that's my answer to your question.
Well, they performed at the NBA Finals, so.
This one?
Yeah.
Wow.
I walked right by them trying to get out of the arena to get some soft serve. Not out of the arena, into the media room to get some. I was like hustling at halftime to get some soft serve and just, you know, ran right past the Jabberwockies.
Did you have green soft serve, mint flavored?
Thank God I did not. I hate mint flavored ice cream. And the idea that it's a green flavor.
Nope. That's the end of today's show.
I did go to
we're not letting you talk anymore.
I went to a Padres game and they were out of Swirl on my, like, in this one concession stand. And that was pretty upsetting.
Swirl's the way to go. But if there is green, you got to do it.
Can I just real quick address a mild controversy that I was engulfed in during the NBA Finals,
I thought this pod was going to end like 7 minutes ago, but sure, you can address your petty grievances out
of the
way.
I got some soft serve at halftime, but they were out of the normal soft serve bowls, so I had to get it in a coffee cup, and it's kind of hard to know how much soft serve to put into one of those things. And several people on Twitter called me out. They're like, why'd you take such little soft serve? Like, why are you, you know, what was with this child size serving of soft serve? It's just, I was doing, you know, you can't be standing over that machine for 6 minutes. Like Malika Andrews is behind you in line. You know, other people want soft serve. Everyone's looking at you. It's the finals. So, you know, you just got to get in and out of there quick.
Did you have toppings? Like, what were the toppings?
I told our colleague Howard Beck he needs to throw his weight around as one of the longest tenured writers in the game to get the Warriors to start offering toppings, because they got no soft serve toppings, which is to me shocking. Well,
in Boston we had everything. It was like being at Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. It was incredible. So that's all I got to say about that.
At Charlie.
Yeah, that's what's up.
Shout out to Staples Center. They have some good soft serve toppings too, and Uncrustables.
They do. Yeah. Okay, I think that is going to do it for today's show. Rohan, as usual, thank you so much for your insight and your expertise. Thank you so much to our listeners for listening, for writing in. Please keep the emails coming. openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Everybody stay safe. Everybody continue to enjoy the NBA offseason. Hey. 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 Yeah.